treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
As we put together the episode for last week with Colin Bennett, who wrote the book on Edward Ruppelt, UFOs over the White House, flying saucers over the White House, whatever, I must say I was gobsmacked how confusing his conversation was.
Yeah, it was kind of tough to wade through at times, but you just got to admire the man for the amount of work he's done over the years. He's very entertaining. He's quite the character, and I really did enjoy the book. I felt his insight, personal opinion about Ruppelt's process, I think was spot on. I think he really brought up some very interesting points. I think his analysis of Ruppelt's process and the people around him was spot on. And I think it's a real, you know, I think a good addition to, you know, the whole Project Blue Book historical sort of revisionism. I think it's a very, very good addition to it.
He kept calling it Operation Blue Book, of course, but I won't worry about that. The thing is, of course, I don't know if I had as many insights into Ruppelt the man as opposed to Ruppelt as the executive in charge of Project Blue Book. That would have been nice. But then he never made an effort, I guess, to contact any members of his family or people who knew him.
And that was a little puzzling and surprising, actually. Now that you mention it.
It's kind of armchair research ad infinitum. I mean, you could have written emails. You could have tried to do a little Google research and said, okay, let's see now. What was the name of his wife? Can I find that person? Is she still alive? Did he have children? You know, what can we say?
I think that would have fleshed out the narrative quite a bit. I think he's really into writing, and he's a very good writer, and some of his turns of phrase were quite memorable. Don't ask me to recite one because I can't remember.
quite memorable, except that you couldn't remember one.
Well, he's just very entertaining as a writer. And, you know, being an aspiring writer myself, I can really appreciate someone that's got some real writing talent, which he does, obviously. And one thing that we didn't talk about was the Ray Santilli fiasco that I think he was involved in helping unmask with Phil Mantel. But I guess we'll have to have him back for another show and see if we can get some sort of audio filter that'll clean up the gobsmacking.
Right. Well, he was coughing a lot through the episode. We kind of clipped that out. Basically, he had been ill, and I gather he was on the mend, and maybe that's why we weren't going to make him look.
3-2-1.
Go ahead. We weren't going to.
3-2-1.
We weren't going to make him look 3-2-1 foolish on the show, so a lot of that was excised from the final version, 3-2-1.
And I'm glad you were the one that had to do it.
Thank you. I resemble that remark. In any case, no, it's interesting, though, that we have to look at how we got here. If we're looking at the UFO field, what we know about the subject, if we don't understand where we came from, we keep repeating the same mistakes. And that's such an unfortunate thing. You know, so some of our listeners may think, yeah, who wants to know about UFO books from the 1950s? That's so old. It's before I was born. Well, maybe it was. But if you don't know what they did, why they did it, you're just going to repeat their mistakes all over again.
You're rehashing old territory. And one thing I've noticed, Gene, is we've, in the past 2 weeks, we have added so many new forum posters and members of the Paracast community. And I don't know if you've noticed, but they're all in their 20s. And this is a very good sign, Gene.
I know we're getting on more radio stations. I don't have the full list. I know very recently we joined a station in Corpus Christi, Texas, which is a pretty large city, pretty large metropolitan area.
And I'm happy Stanford land.
Sure. I'm happy that we joined that station and that we are in Corpus Christi. If you want the Paracast to be on your favorite radio station, a talk station in your city, write us news@theparacast.com, news@theparacast.com. I will take that information. I'll send it on to our network people at GCN Network, and have them work through it and see if they can't get them on the roster. So we're trying. We're trying to get out on as many stations as possible. We cannot do it without your help. We need your help and advice. Speaking of the forums, it seems to me the discussion that has never ended and won't end is still about Crystal Skulls. There's no last word on that. It just goes on.
Well, we're going to have to get who I consider to be arguably the top expert right now in the field in terms of non-scientist experts, Stephen Mailer, who was Nick Nocerino's protege. Nick, of course, was the longtime, well-considered Crystal Skull researcher who pretty much wrote the book on the subject, for better or for worse. But you're right, Gene. I'm just amazed. It's one of the largest threads that I've seen on the Paracast since I've become involved. And boy, and unless we kind of put the kibosh on it, it's going to continue. It's like Frankenstein. It's got a life of its own.
Well, as long as it stays within the range of acceptability. I mean, it's kind of drifted out there a little bit. But as long as it remains acceptable, we'll keep it going. I mean, up till now, the longest thread we had was early in the Paracast Forum's history, where we talked about Billy Meyer. And that went on for thousands of posts until we said, this is enough. I can't handle this anymore. Let's just stop it. It erupts every so often. Another one was abductions.
Yep.
Okay, lots of discussion on abductions. And you wonder, when all this happens, why does a discussion thread, which is a topic of discussion in a forum, why it suddenly gets out of hand? A couple of simple messages and somebody drops in and says, oh no, it can't be that, and they give their opinion, and suddenly 10,000 messages later, they're still talking about it.
Well, I must say, Gene, it's amazing. Several of the posters on the forum have spent days calling the Smithsonian, making phone calls all over, digging deep into the research material about the Crystal Skull subject. I mean, do these people have a day job, or do they have a life?
They're independently wealthy. I think that's it right there. They have all the money in the world. They don't need any more money. So it's no big deal.
Why can't they send it to us?
Well, you know, we mentioned, I guess, half seriously, that if any of you has the ability to do research, conduct research about these subjects, and you're willing to contribute the facilities of your laboratory, and we can get samples to investigate, we could send you evidence of cases, photographs, etc., we'd welcome that. We did get a letter from somebody, a scientist, who said he has the facilities, so we're going to follow up on that.
We are indeed.
Sure. But, you know, if we want to set up a fund for that, that would be nice. I don't know how to go about that yet. Okay, I'm not an accountant.
No, we'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. Once the checks start coming in, we'll figure it out. Have to do it, you know, the fair and square, and make sure that the money's properly allocated. No nonsense, like the nonsense we heard about the controversy over at MUFON. I don't know who the good or bad party there, but there were so many complaints there. We don't want to get into that. We're not a UFO investigative organization. We're just a radio show. It's just a talk show. But if we have some people who are willing to contribute towards investigation research, people who have the facilities, write us, news@theparacast.com, news@theparacast.com. Now, during the course of the discussion, which I could figure out this part of the discussion, a few times Colin Bennett mentioned author Nick Redfern, who's one of our guest co-hosts, about the fact that he's contributed material towards Nick's new Men in Black book. The book is called The Real Men in Black. We're not talking about the fake Men in Black here. The Real Men in Black, Evidence, Famous Cases, and True Stories of These Mysterious Men and Their Connection to the UFO Phenomena. Okay, now he's referring to phenomena as a plural, not a singular.
Yeah.
It's not a phenomenon, it's a phenomena. We'll have to debate that with Nick. The proper British gentleman, which one is it? Now, understand at the same time, as this is going on, they are making a new Men in Black movie, Men in Black 3, with the original stars, Will Smith, and, of course, Tommy Lee Jones. And I guess Rip Torn, who, if he can just keep his gun in his holster and not take it out when he's drunk and he's walking into a bank. He's a wild guy.
And Josh Brolin is playing a young Tommy Lee Jones from the 60s.
Josh Brolin? Well, he can play George Bush. I guess he can play a young Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Coming up next, we have The Real Men in Black is the book. Nick Redfern is the guest. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. You're in
The Paracast.
Okay, so who is watching your home when you're not there? Help protect your home with a security system monitored by ADT. It's the leader in home security. Remember, ADT is the number one monitoring service in the country. It comes with world-famous ADT yard signs. The monitoring cost is just $1 a day. You probably pay more for coffee. This is the safety for your family and your possessions. You can save up to 20% on homeowners insurance. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer. Call now and get $850 of equipment and activation free. Call 1-866-778-3127. Call 1-866-778-3127. And here's our fast disclaimer. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement at $35 to $39 per month. Call for terms and conditions and license numbers.
When making important financial decisions, you should always know the facts. That's why Midas Resources is willing to pay you to read the facts. Midas Resources, a team of hand-picked financial specialists with decades of financial experience who are ready to provide you with state-of-the-art, up-to-date financial services. Midas Resources offers a host of services and stands behind their products. In fact, if you call and order their free Midas report, Midas Resources will pay you. This detailed report will provide you with financial history on the safest and most profitable areas to invest in. If you read the report, Midas Resources will send you a free Walking Liberty silver half dollar. So what are you waiting for? Get the facts and call Midas Resources toll free at 888-292-2709. That's 888-292-2709. And remember, if you read the Midas report, you'll receive a free Walking Liberty silver half dollar.
You've heard a lot lately about zeolite, but what is it and why do you need it? Zeolite is a beautiful, complex, crystalline structure that encapsulates radiation and odors. ZeoKing Zeolite naturally eliminates radiation poisoning your body may pick up from x-rays, security scanners, or nuclear fallout. ZeoKing flushes environmental toxins absorbed from smoke, cell phones, and chemicals, so it detoxifies heavy metals including mercury, lead, and cadmium. ZeoKing Zeolite helps boost your immune system, allowing your body to balance itself and cut off food supply to cancer and parasites. Order your ZeoKing Zeolite now from ZeoKing.com for only $39.99 and receive a free month supply with every order. Call 888-402-6779. That's 888-402-6779. Or visit ZeoKing.com, that's Z-E-O-King.com, for natural elimination of radiation poisoning.
For centuries, silver has been used as a powerful natural antibiotic, and as a listener to this station, you probably already know the benefits of using colloidal silver. With so many websites to choose from, finding a reputable, patriotic company with great products at affordable prices can be a difficult task. Introducing UtopiaSilver.com. UtopiaSilver.com carries the best, most effective, and most affordable colloidal silver and colloidal gold products in the industry. UtopiaSilver.com also carries products to fit your lifestyle, including weight loss, immune system defense, cleanses, herbs, joint and bone care, and much more. First-time customers using promo code GCN50 will receive 50% off all colloidal products. Visit us today at Utopia Silver, that's U-T-O-P-I-A Silver, utopiasilver.com, or call 888-213-4338. That's 888-213-4338. UtopiaSilver.com, taking back America's healthcare one American at a time.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com. Get in on all the action at forum.theparacast.com.
The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. Our guest this week is also one of our guest co-hosts. He's Nick Redfern, and the book is all about the real men in black. And before we talk about the real men in black, let me introduce you to the real R-E-E-L men in black from the movies. Now, this is what we hear about men in black, of course, the most popular concept is in the movie, not in reality, and we'll have to separate that. So from the movie, the original Men in Black movie, Will Smith was co-author and rap singer of this chorus. Here come the Men in Black, the Galaxy Defenders. Here come the Men in Black. They won't let you remember. Now, Nick Redfern, how do we separate the Men in Black from the graphic comic book, the movie, to the real Men in Black?
Well, you know, I think in some respect, it's actually a difficult job, purely and simply because, you know, when you have a movie and a sort of a motif, if you like, that's so popular and powerful within Hollywood, many people's perceptions, particularly those who've come to the UFO subject post, you know, appearance of the film, their sort of views are created and sort of modified by the, you know, the nature of the movie. This, the idea that the Men in Black mystery is solely one revolving around government agents silencing UFO witnesses or researchers, when the reality is that it goes into sort of far stranger realms. And, you know, all I guess we can really do is point out that, you know, the Men in Black movie, the comic book, yes, there is this aspect to that in the real-life Men in Black stories, but there's equally far stranger aspects to it as well.
Specifically here, I mean, originally when we heard about Men in Black, in connection with the Albert K. Bender incident back in the early 1950s, we thought of them as government agents who were just around to frighten people into shutting up about what they might know about UFOs. When did it deviate from that concept, which isn't so difficult to understand?
Well, I think in some respects, you know, it's always been there, but it's been sort of under the radar a little bit, and people have just misperceived what the Men in Black mystery is about. I mean, you know, it's good you bring up Albert Bender, because chiefly he was the one person, more than any other, arguably, who sort of gave birth to the whole Men in Black puzzle. Now, Bender was an intriguing and kind of weird character as well. He was steeped in not just ufological research, but also the realm of the occult, the supernatural, the paranormal, both in fiction and in fact. You know, he was someone who delved into Ouija boards, black magic, all sorts of things. And he actually lived in an offshoot of the attic of his stepfather's home, which was sort of replete with the requisite creaking floorboards, and he painted sort of graphic imagery of monstrous faces on the walls of the attic. He sort of lived in this sort of unusual environment, doing UFO research, dabbling in the occult. The story was that after he set up this group called the International Flying Saucer Bureau in the early 50s, which actually reached almost like stratospheric heights, I think.
What do we mean by stratospheric? How big?
Well, I mean, his group, you know, most people set a UFO group up in the little town or the city where they live, and they have monthly meetings where 50 people will turn up. What happened was with Bender's group was it actually attracted interest from all around the world, and there were chapters in Britain, in Australia, you name it, you know, in the developed world, there were chapters. And his newsletter literally, you know, went out to hundreds of people. And the group became, I guess, like a major force within the entire UFO field for a brief time. And I say a brief time because literally within a year, Bender quickly closed the IFSB down and alluded to having got a visit from three guys in black suits who basically said, you know, if you know what's good for you, you'll walk away from this subject. Now, the reason we know this is because Bender quietly told a couple of friends and colleagues, one being an early UFO researcher named Augie Roberts, and also told Gray Barker. Barker and Bender were friends, and they shared interest in UFOs and the occult. And Barker, as you know, was a sort of very well, sort of rounded writer. He, you know, very, very atmospheric writer. You do have to, as I point out in the book, be careful how to separate fact from fiction and sort of metaphor and parable, etc., in Barker's works. But his book, his 1956 book, They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers, told the story of Bender's IFSB and how the clampdown came. Now, if you read the book, a lot of people have assumed that the book says that Bender was shut up by the government. It actually doesn't. It implies that, but it doesn't specifically come out right and say so. And one of the reasons why is because Barker full well knew that the story that Bender was hiding actually didn't really support that notion. What happened was that a few years later in 1962, Bender published or wrote his own book that Barker published titled Flying Saucers and the Three Men. And in this book, Bender's MIB are sort of far stranger. They're the sort of definitively weird, pale-faced, glowing-eyed, sometimes men in black, wig-wearing, makeup-wearing characters that seem more ominous and unsettling than the government side of things. And he said that those entities would literally sort of manifest in the attic, and he'd go into almost like an altered state where he would smell like fire and brimstone, he'd feel dizzy and nauseous, the room would start to spin, and suddenly the men in black would appear. He said that these were the entities that told him to quit UFO research. So in other words,
he was a contactee.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could argue he was a contactee. But I think the important thing is that even Bender's story, which kicked off the Men in Black mystery, does point out that, you know, although there is a government angle to this, and ironically where the Bender story gets confusing is that I used the Freedom of Information Act and found that, I mean, that the FBI had actually opened files on both Bender and Barker, even to the extent where there's one document in the file that I reproduce in the book, which talks about how none other than J. Edgar Hoover ordered one of his agents to get hold of Barker's they knew too much about flying saucers. So, you know, on the one hand, we have Bender talking about being visited by paranormal, almost, men in black, and yet we have the FBI, who at that time wore suits and fedoras or Homburg hats, etc., also taking an interest in Bender. So this is why he gets into such confusing and overlapping areas, I think.
But with Bender, can we take him seriously, or did he just write that book, and I gather Barker probably did heavy editing of it. Did he write that book just to answer the questions, or just to have a little notoriety because of his interest in horror films, the paranormal, etc.?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. It's one, you know, that I also raise in the book. There's, you know, I don't shy away from the fact that this entire issue is steeped in major controversy. Now, for example, you know, as I said, there's no doubt that Bender set up the organization and that it did reach, you know, big heights. And bear in mind, this was also at the time when the CIA's Robertson panel was recommending that, you know, the yearly new UFO groups in the US should be watched carefully, you know, for any issues relative to patriotism or infiltration by the dreaded Ruskies, etc. And so, you know, on the one hand, some people speculated that Bender actually got a visit from government people, but then kind of modified this into a fantastic tale of a meeting with occult men in black, either to gain notoriety or because he was fearful of actually telling the truth and getting into trouble with the FBI. But enough of the story had leaked out to where he had to say something.
I'll tell you what, we'll get into more of Albert Bender, the real Men in Black, and lots more with Nick Redfern. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. You're in
the Paracast.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack of the Rockoids. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockoids lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans the galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockoids is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockoids, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition."
Ready to save? Then you're ready for the Super Summer Sale at Herbal Healer Academy. Herbal Healer has been the leader in quality natural supplements for 23 years. Log on to HerbalHealer.com and take advantage of Herbal Healer Academy's incredible savings on 500 parts per million colloidal silver. The best pharmaceutical grade available at all sizes on sale. Super Male Plex with you Hindi and Super Femplex for summer toning. Buy glucosamine chondroitin 60 caps summer sale priced at only $12. Colon Enhancer 250 caps summer sale priced at just $18. And if your brain's a little foggy, we have a great supplement on sale called Memory Power. Log on and hit the postcard specials link for more super summer savings at herbalhealer.com. As always, new customers get a free catalog with first order. Herbal Healer Academy, healing the world with nature one person at a time.
If you drive for a living, you don't get paid to stop or wait in line. Keep your wheels moving with PrePass. Bypass way stations. Fly by port of entry facilities. Stay moving at highway speed while the guy without PrePass waits in line. Save time, save money. Call 888-401-PASS to try PrePass free. That's 888-401-PASS.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
The American people think they live in a constitutional republic. Land of the free, home of the brave. Right.
Just try those lines on the judge when you get a ticket or have to deal with a big bad IRS.
Instead, use escapeharassment.com. Since 1972, our volunteer group of researchers and educators have successfully taught how to escape tickets by law, and it works. Escape harassment has three different steps to follow, depending on where you are in the ticket process. Learn how to escape tickets, IRS, or court proceedings before you go to court. For free, three-minute pre-recorded information and FAQs, call this toll-free number, 1-877-457-9009. That's 877-457-9009. Or go to escapeharassment.com and see our money back guarantee. That's escapeharassment.com. Remember, escape harassment works.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
This is Kurt Seven, the author of UFO Mysteries, and you're listening to the Paracast.
The subject is Men in Black, not the kind that Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones and all those people portray in the movies, but the ones supposedly real with Nick Redfern. The book is called The Real Men in Black. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien, a learned scholar, according to Nick.
That's correct. That's what he is.
Oh, well, this show is just getting away from me here. It's being taken away, and they're taking me away. Now, okay, let's have more of a devil's advocate theory here about Albert Bender. And that is, do you consider the possibility here that Bender contrived this Men in Black thing just because he lost interest in UFOs, wanted to get out of it, and decided to go out with a bang, as they were, and then after being contacted, overwhelmed, and otherwise being totally annoyed from people who kept visiting him at his home, writing him, calling him over the years, saying, tell us about the Men in Black, tell us about the Men in Black, and he said, okay, I'll write a book.
Well, yeah, I think there's that aspect to it, but equally, I think, and most of the people I interviewed for the book also agreed, and people who knew Bender, that he actually did get a visit from someone. The nature of who that someone is, you know, is open to debate. For example, I interviewed Jerome Clark for the book. And Jerry was, you know, very open to the idea that Bender really did get a visit from government agents, possibly sort of an outgrowth of this recommendation from the Robertson panel. But he also felt that Bender basically wrote his book, Flying Saucers and the Three Men, to get the UFO community off his back. Now, other people have speculated, and I get into this quite deeply in the book, about how Bender's experiences may have been some sort of like internal psychological experience. I talk about the fact that, you know, when the Men in Black would appear, he would talk about, you know, he'd go into a dizzy spell, he'd feel lightheaded as if he was drifting away into another world. The room would be filled with these sudden powerful odors like brimstone. And then, lo and behold, the Men in Black would appear, and then after a while, he would sort of drift back into reality. And as I point out, altered states of the mind, intense migraines, all of which Bender experienced, even imaginary smells are all actually symptoms of a number of brain-borne situations, one of which is epilepsy. Epilepsy has all these characteristics, migraines, you know, an altered state, and imaginary smells. A lot of people have reported like a brimstone-type smell who have epileptic seizures. Now, I'm not saying he definitely had epilepsy, but when we look at these aspects and characteristics of how the Men in Black would appear and the physical effects it would have on Bender, I don't think we can rule out that the idea that he wasn't a hoaxer, that he was genuinely reporting something, but a lot of it may have been born out of a brain-borne psychological condition linked with his own subconscious worries about having actually been visited by government agents. And it all sort of spilled out into almost like a waking dream type scenario that may have had even some sort of external reality to it. Who knows? But I don't think it's as simple as he just wanted to quit the subject, so he wrote a book and saying, this is why I quit, now leave me alone.
Now, I remember in my early years that Bender appeared before Jim Moseley's discussion group in New York after the book came out. After that, I heard nothing from Bender. Did he just get out of it totally after that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, he just quit the subject. I mean, this is the interesting thing. I mean, you find often in ufology, people quit it, they come back to it, or if they don't, you know, they'll write their memoirs years later, or they'll still stay in touch with people in the field and say, hey, you know, what's the latest news? That sort of thing. But Bender didn't. You know, when he said he was walking away, he walked away. You know, he surfaced from time to time again in other areas, but certainly not in the entire, in the UFO subject. I mean, it was a case that he just did not want anything else to do with it at all.
You said in other areas, how so?
Well, one of the things he was actually interested in was the music of Max Steiner. And that was something that he got involved in quite deeply in and around Los Angeles. And you know, people would see him from time to time. You know, there were stories people would try and photograph him or call him up, but he just did not want anything to do with this at all. And what he was actually doing when he was in California, he was involved in preserving the work of Max Stein, who's a film composer. And essentially, he just did not, you know, he would not speak to anyone who approached him about the UFO subject. And I think, you know, this, to me, does speak certain volumes in the sense that if he just wanted to quit, you know, it would be, well, okay, I've quit, leave me alone. It wasn't. It was almost like a terror-induced reluctance just not to talk about it. He just did not want to go down that path anymore.
Okay, so we don't know, of course, what really happened to Bender, but do you think that the government really had people who'd run around and suggest to UFO witnesses or UFO club heads, hey, don't talk about this?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no doubt if we look at things from the historical perspective of when Bender kicked things off, you know, as I said, I don't think the fact that Bender was at the height of his work in 52 and 53, that it's coincident. This was the very same time frame that the Robertson panel was recommending, hey, you know, we need to watch these early UFO groups to see if they've been infiltrated, you know, directly or indirectly. What their patriotism or not isn't with respect to the United States, watch them closely and report back. You know, the fact that this is the very same time frame does lead me to believe that there were government people going out, according to the recommendations of the Robertson panel, watching UFO groups. I mean, we know the FBI visited people like George Van Tassel and George Adamski because they've declassified their files, which talk openly about the visits. It may well be in some cases those government people who for the early 1950s would have been dressed probably in black suits and fedora type hats might have overstepped the mark and instead of just asking questions about the group, hey, you know, what's all this going on with UFOs? What are you doing? They may have overstepped the mark and made a veiled warning, and some of these stories may have sort of nurtured the Men in Black mythology. And I do wonder if that is what happened with Bender. But then, you know, if he did have some sort of condition of the brain and all these subconscious worries about, you know, being visited from the FBI, which might have been fairly traumatic for him, spilled out into some sort of, you know, obscure but nevertheless significant altered state in which this whole scenario plays out in his mind when he possibly is in an altered state, but it is based on a reality that becomes distorted through his subconscious fears, etc.
Okay, so where did the Men in Black begin? Was it with Bender, or are there other cases predating Bender that involve people like this?
Well, you know, there are. You know, I primarily began with Bender in the book, chiefly because, you know, he was the one person more than anybody else who kicked off the mystery, and then Barker certainly, you know, took it to even bigger levels in 3 years later in 1956 with his book. But if you look back into certainly UFO lore from 47, the sort of the notorious Maury Island case in Tacoma, where allegedly like a fleet of UFOs was seen over the harbour at Maury Island, and one supposedly exploded and rained debris down onto the shore and into the waters. That case is sort of replete with men in black aspects, things like telephone interference, bugging of UFO researchers, even somebody dressed in black warning one of the key players in the story not to talk about the event. But when you look at it, you know, this sounds more like a straightforward intel op where military personnel were going out and, you know, watching people talking about the Maury Island case, which may not have had any merit to it, but, you know, government was, elements of the official world were still interested in it.
Well,
but
they did. They did. They sent Air Force officers to collect physical evidence, and they were killed in a mysterious plane crash.
No, you're right. That's one of the strange things about the Maury Island case. So, again, to me, this sounds more like a straightforward military operation that had a lot of conspiratorial overtones, but I'm not entirely sure it has anything to do with the weirder Men in Black, which is sort of the focus of the book. You know, the thrust of the book isn't so much the government angle, although I do have a chapter or two on that issue, but it's to point out to people that, you know, the imagery that we have of the Men in Black, the government's MIBs, is actually a small aspect of the story, and it may not be the most significant aspect either.
Well, Nick, you also bring up, and I think insightfully so, that all down through history, there have been figures associated with unusual occurrences, warning people, and oftentimes they're dressed in black.
I'll tell you what, we'll get into these historical Men in Black soon. In our next segment, we have Nick Redfern. The book is The Real Men in Black. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. You're in
The Paracast.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I had already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com. For 58 years, Fate has provided true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate brings you the latest in all aspects of the paranormal, like angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, and much, much more. To receive your complimentary Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
If you're concerned about radiation poisoning from Japan in the air, water, or food and can't find potassium iodide, go to RestoreYourHealthNow.com and choose Liquid Zeolite. Liquid Zeolite is hands down the best product to remove radiation from your body and safely removes toxins, heavy metals, boosts energy levels, and promotes a strong immune system. For fatigue, muscle weakness, headaches, memory loss, influenza, joint pain, or toxic radiation poisoning, use Liquid Zeolite from RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Liquid Zeolite is so powerful it was used to clean up contamination in Chernobyl, yet so gentle you won't even know you're taking it. Liquid Zeolite comes with a money-back guarantee but is only available at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Learn how to get free bottles of Liquid Zeolite at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. That's RestoreYourHealthNow.com or call 800-880-9976. Call 800-880-9976 today and learn how to get free bottles of Liquid Zeolite.
Never buy home canning jar lids again. No kidding. When you buy Tadler reusable canning lids once, you'll never buy canning lids ever again. Safely store emergency preparedness foods for years. Traditional metal lids are single-use throwaways containing BPA. But Tadler reusable canning lids are guaranteed to last a lifetime when used as designed for home canning. Tadler lids are made with a USDA and FDA-approved food-grade plastic, safe for direct food contact, and contain no BPA. Tadler lids are dishwasher safe, usable with standard pressure or water bath canning, eliminate food spoilage from acid corrosion, fit standard standard mason jars are indefinitely reusable and are proudly made in the USA. Place orders at reusablecanninglids.com or call 1-877-747-2793. 877-747-2793. Call 877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's reusablecanninglids.com for Tadler reusable canning lids, the original since 1976.
GCN listeners, why have you been hearing so much about Dermatol, the all-natural, all-purpose first aid spray? Because it's the must-have first aid product you need in your preparedness kit. Dermatol is made in America by Americans who know there's a more affordable, natural way to treat cuts, burns, bites, rashes, shingles, boils, and many other skin problems. Dermatol is gentle enough for diaper rash, powerful enough for bed sores, and harmless to the eyes and mouth. It's great for the whole family, even your family pets. Dermatol is antimicrobial, antifungal, antiviral, and not diminished by freezing, extreme heat, or years in storage. Dermatol is an absolute must for any first aid or preparedness kit. Dermatol's soothing, rapid restoration of injured skin is so effective, it's guaranteed. Order yours today. Call 800-217-6677. 800-217-6677. That's 800-217-6677. Efficient, economical, effective. Spray it all with Dermatol.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
You're in the Paracast. You never know what's going to happen next.
Nick Redfern has a book out called The Real Men in Black, just out about the men in black, not just the physical ones, but maybe somewhat more than physical. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. Before we broke, Chris was posing this fascinating question about historical men in black. You want to continue with that question, Chris, before we get the answer?
Well, I think it's pretty simple that there have been reports down through history, whether they're credible or not, I think at this point is beside the point. But figures dressed in black have figured prominently in some pretty interesting incidences that have been supposedly documented and recorded down through history. You want to address that a little bit, Nick?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this is an interesting thing, is that when the more we look back into this mystery, we find it's not just a modern-day one. It's a very old one, but it seems that what we have today is more of like a modern-day motif of a very ancient puzzle, if you like. Now, to give you a classic example, in 1905, there was a wave of UFO encounters in Wales, in the United Kingdom. These were essentially, if you read the original newspaper reports, they sound like typical ghost lights, you know, like the Marfa lights or something along those lines, that were seen late at night in sort of the dark hills and valleys of Wales. And, you know, people at the time weren't talking about UFOs and they thought it was something supernatural or paranormal. One of the newspapers that reported on this quite extensively was called the Barmouth Advertiser. And it talks about how during these particular encounters with these ghost lights in and around the valleys and the hills, this is an exact quote from the newspaper. In the neighborhood dwells an exceptionally intelligent young woman of the peasant stock whose bedroom has been visited three nights in succession by a man dressed in black. This figure has delivered a message to the girl which she is too frightened to relate. Now that sounds like something straight out of Keel, Barker or Bender, and it's associated with weird lights. The person delivers a message which has intimidated the witness into silence, and they're dressed in black, and they're a man. You know, it's like you could not get a closer description to the men in black than that, except for the fact that it originates in a Welsh newspaper in 1905. You know, so when we get things like this, it demonstrates that whatever the nature of the phenomenon, you know, it didn't begin in the 50s or the 40s and, you know, with FBI personnel or CIA, et cetera. You know, the CIA and the FBI certainly didn't exist back then, and I'm quite sure if they did, they wouldn't have been skulking around the valleys of Wales at 10 o'clock.
Especially without their neuralizers.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, she remembered the encounter but didn't want to talk about it. So evidently they left their neuralizers back at headquarters.
Yeah, that's sort of like a big no-no.
Got to watch out for those neuralizers.
Yeah, exactly.
We get fried brain.
Like,
you know, neuralizers might be like a cell phone. We know that cell phones now can fry your brain.
That's true. that's true, they do. That's why, using a cell phone, you know, some people say it's not the best thing, which, I don't know, we all use cell phones. I guess in 50 years, if we've all got brain cancer, we'll know they were right, so.
Put it on speaker, dude.
But, yeah, I mean, this is just one example of, you know, an old report. There are also reports, the same, just like the Men in Black, of mysterious characters turning up in sort of the 1500s and 1600s when people were doing research into the realm of alchemy. You know, these black cloaked figures back then, not sort of suit-wearing, Homburg-wearing figures, but black cloaked figures would turn up and impart secrets about alchemy. And stress to the person the importance of not dabbling recklessly in this sort of field, and then they'd vanish as mysteriously as they'd appeared. You know, so you have to wonder, has the mystery been around as long as we've been around, you know, but perhaps its motif changes depending on the cultural settings and the perceptions of the peak of the particular time.
Chris?
Oh, it's up to me.
I've offended everybody into total silence.
Well, that's a really good point, Nick. And like many subjects in the paranormal that appear to have a modern sort of face, if you dig deep enough and go back in time, you find tantalizing clues that maybe some of these paranormal mysteries that we're, you know, thinking as a modern thing actually have more ancient roots. And I think this is an important point that you bring up in the book. And why don't we continue kind of in our timeline here in the 50s, look at some of the other cases that occurred that support some sort of paranormal that appears to be government or government that appears to be paranormal cases that kind of help fuel this whole thing as it's burbling in the culture, and look at some of those earlier cases from the 50s.
Well, I mean, even Barker himself, you know, was partly responsible, not just with his book, for sort of nurturing the Men in Black mystery, but he even claimed to have been visited by an agent of the FBI who wanted to know all about Bender's IFSB, which, you know, could be seen as adding weight to the notion that Bender actually really did get a visit from government people. Now, you know, people have speculated that because Barker, everybody interviewed, you know, about Barker, you know, said, no, the guy was not a liar when he, you know, he wrote the books that he wrote, but he wasn't above turning, you know, a bright sunny day into the proverbial dark and stormy night. And he would perhaps modify a few things, not from a deceptive perspective, but actually trying to get across real ideas, themes, etc., that he believed, and that he felt, you know, changing a few things here and there, if it had the desired effect, was worthwhile.
So sounds like John Keel.
Yeah, so we have to be very careful, you know, with some of these early accounts from Bender and Barker. But Barker, you know, as I said, had this alleged experience with an FBI agent. And throughout the 50s, you know, we get things like this. We see reports of people turning up, apparently looking like government agents, and silencing people. But then in the 60s, you know, which is still sort of the early years of Men in Black research, we do see a change where it becomes definitively weird. And I think this is partly due or majorly due to the fact that Barker was still on the scene and John Keel came on the scene as well and, you know, began doing research into places like Point Pleasant with the Mothman saga and the many and varied Men in Black that turned up in that particular situation. I mean, I talk about these in the book as well, you know, the fact that a lot of people, because you see the Mothman Prophecies film, you know, it tells the story of Mothman, but the Men in Black don't appear in it at all. But
yeah,
it's
Richard Gere is actually kind of the Men in Black.
Yeah, you know, you don't really have any sort of real Men in Black, but if you read Keel's book, you know, it's dominated by Men in Black encounters. And a number of these in the town of Point Pleasant were reported by a local journalist, newspaper journalist, on the Point Pleasant, she was the Point Pleasant correspondent for a West Virginia paper called The Messenger, a woman named Mary Heyer. And she reported to Keel a number of encounters with the Men in Black, one who literally sort of turned up late one night, and he had sort of like a bowl-type haircut, was actually smaller than 5 feet in height, had these weird hypnotic eyes. The craziest thing about it of all was that he seemed weirdly obsessed by Heyer's ballpoint pen. And when she told him, well, he could keep it, he sort of gave out this bone-chilling, cackle-like laugh and charged off out the door into the night. You know, this is just sort of the bizarre things that we get in these Men in Black reports. You know, they sort of almost thrive on absurdity, if you like.
Sounds like a trickster to me, Gene.
You know, another question I'd ask here, then, is we know, of course, that Gray Barker and especially John Keel were probing into these Men in Black cases, especially cases where the Men in Black did not seem to be government agents, but something altogether different. Do those cases exist outside of their investigations of them? Did they persist after Keel and Barker left the scene?
Well, yeah, they do. I mean, I'll give you a quick example of Keel's involvement, if you like, which is a really very, very strange story. But just before I get to the issue of, you know, whether they existed after they finished their investigations, one of the people I interviewed extensively for the book was Brad Steiger, because Brad, who's still, you know, a big player on the scene today, he was around, you know, back in the early to mid-60s when the sort of the second wave of Men in Black lore, if you like, was really taking off. And he got to know people like Keel, Barker, Jim Moseley, Alan Greenfield, people like that. And Steiger told me in one of the interviews that I did with him for the book, and this is reproduced in the book, how there was one thing he wanted to discuss with me, or chose to discuss with me, which he was a bit reticent to do so, and he'd never spoken about before. But he told me how when he came to know John Keel, and you know they would have dinner together and a meet-up, etc., that he told him, how Keel told Steiger how one occasion the Men in Black actually visited Keel at his own apartment. And according to the story told to Steiger by Keel, these Men in Black literally manifested through the front door of his apartment. And Steiger said when he was sat opposite him hearing this story, he did not get the opinion that, you know, Keel was pulling his leg, yanking his chain or whatever, that he was deadly serious, that, you know, these Men in Black had essentially scared the hell out of him by just literally kind of materializing through the door.
We'll have more of these incredible encounters of the Men in Black with Nicholas Redfern, author of The Real Men in Black.
The co-host is Chris O'Brien. You're in
The Paracast.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, and investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.